Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Just last year, the Exeter wildfire really woke up a lot of people in Rhode Island. Certainly, there's a climate change question surrounding it. Certainly, there's, you know, a number of practical questions surrounding it. But one thing that really jumped out in the wake of that event, as I was touring the area down at Exeter where this fire took place, and certainly by standards compared with California or up in Canada, what they're seeing in terms of the actual physical geography of the space, it wasn't a major disaster. Let's be clear about that. No lives were lost, really, only, in the grand scheme of things, it was not the biggest disaster in the world. But it did wake us up to a lot of realities in Rhode Island in terms of the condition of our forests right now and also the management of forest fire prevention. I learned that over the years, the physical people that were responsible for forest fire oversight may not even exist within DEM on a full-time basis to the extent that they used to. And certainly when it comes to the condition of our forests and clear cutting or reducing and making a little bit more of a practical environment for stopping forest fires once they happen, that certainly was a major priority. Mike Healy joins us on the heels of an announcement that came out just yesterday from the DEM on some efforts to try to mitigate forest fire. Mike's the spokesperson, the chief public affairs officer for the DEM. And as always, thanks for hopping on, sir.
Bill, thanks so much for having me. That was a great intro to a very big issue. You're right. Those two back-to-back wildfires, West Greenwich and then Exeter, literally within days of each other. We're fighting one in West Greenwich, and then the other one, which was much bigger, much more dangerous, emerges. And so you're right. It I think that did open a lot of eyes. There was a state, I believe it's called the State Forestry Commission, was formed through legislation after those fires. That commission has been meeting. It's led by Rep. Megan Cotter. I'm pretty sure they're going to be doing a report. We have a couple of DEM folks on that commission. There's been, you know, there's foresters, there's conservationists, there's other folks on that commission, but for sure a focus of that commission and a focus of DEM is, okay, we're known as the ocean state. We've got 50% forest lands in our state. And what are we going to do to lessen this threat? So one thing for sure, and an important point you raised, DEM forestry doesn't have the staff that it used to. And yet, along with EMA, of course, DEM is going to be one of the lead agencies responding to forest to wildfires. So one thing we've done is focus on that lack of capacity to build capacity. And so we're doing, for the second year in a row, a firefighter training program that is basically aimed at teaching municipal firefighters and folks from state agencies, mostly DEM, who don't, you know, necessarily do forestry or you know, firefighting as their primary gig, to learn the basic skills to get out and augment, you know, the first responders who are, you know, already very experienced in this realm. So last year, which was our first year of a very intensive training program, which goes on for a week, we were able to train 25 new firefighters, and this year we're aiming for the same thing. So for sure, we got to build the capacity, because when a fire happens, and you'll remember this, Bill, and I think you reported this, you know, we had crews. Fortunately, Rhode Island has signed forestry compacts and firefighting compacts with different states and different, even different countries in Canada. We had, excuse me, we had a crew from Maine. We had a crew from Connecticut. We had a crew from Cape Cod. We had a, I think we might've had a crew from Canada too, but the idea of these compacts is if a fire becomes big, bigger than a, than an entity, say Rhode Island can handle, then, you know, if these crews from different states, you know, have the capacity and availability, they're going to come on out and help us. In the same way, Rhode Island, as part of our deal in the compact, helps other places if they need help from us. So that's just one piece of this puzzle that you are talking about.
And that's a critical piece because, look, the vast majority of our woodlands are located in areas where the fire departments are volunteer, and they do they do great work, but there's a response time that is beyond that of Providence or somewhere that has a full-time fire department, because you physically have to get your firefighters to the station to get into the apparatus to figure out, you know, where the origin place is, or sort of the front line of the forest fire is. So it's a complex process. And that response time, they do a pretty good job. I mean, just thinking about Exeter, I mean, there were firefighters on scene pretty quickly from North Kingstown and Exeter, speaking to the Exeter forest fire. But, you know, the more training that can go into this in concert with other prevention measures, boy, that is essential and practical and something that I'm sure the departments definitely appreciate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and number one, I'm so glad you're mentioning the local municipal responders. I mean, really, in both cases last summer, both West Greenwich and Exeter, the local responders, the local emergency management folks, did a tremendous job. You know, you really when you're talking about these fires that you know, when the conditions are right, as they were last year with extremely dry weather. I don't know whether technically we had a drought last year, but it was really, really dry. But when you're talking about those situations and a fire, you know, pretty much explodes like that, you know, DEM, RIEMA, there's no way we can do that, you know, handle that by ourselves. So to have trained local, you know, wildland firefighter response from local municipalities is a huge thing. It's a huge support, and we appreciate it.
Let's talk about this announcement yesterday that pertains to Arcadia. And look, there's no doubt Arcadia, it's the largest wooded parcel in the state. It spans Exeter, Hopkinton, Richmond, and West Greenwich. And it's a beautiful place. First of all, anyone who hasn't spent time out there, there's a lot of options. You can get lost literally or figuratively out in Arcadia on really any day of the year and find something amazing. But you're announcing a project that's going to work to thin the dense tree cover and remove the underlying brush out in Arcadia. And this is what's called a shaded fuel break, and it's going to reduce and manage the fuel, which is the brush in this case, that is the fuel within this designated area, that lessens the risk of the fire becoming completely out of control. It's not a fire break. The fire break is something different. It's either natural or man-made barrier that is developed simply and literally to stop forest fires. And if I recall, out in Exeter, one of the major reasons why there was this didn't spill over into, you know, towards Wickford was because of a fire break that a private property owner had installed themselves in clear cutting trees and working towards that. But so talk about the decision to create this, not fire break, but shaded fuel break, and what this means for maybe other wooded areas in the state going forward.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So a couple of years ago, so the genesis of this bill is a couple of years ago in the 2022 green bond. There'll be another green bond on the 2024. So in November, just, you know, yesterday, Governor McKee announced the new budget, submitted the budget to the Rhode Island General Assembly, where you know the saying from grade school, or at least as a creaky baby boomer, I do. You know, the governor proposes and the legislature disposes, right? So
right.
we'll see what happens with that budget. But there's another green bond. In any event, in the 2022 green bond, Rhode Island voters approved overwhelmingly by almost 70%, $3 million that went to protect state forest lands. And so we're using the number right now. It's going to be a $360,000 project, which is a big number, and it could go more than that. But to your point, Arcadia is massive. And I'm just looking at I don't have a GIS map in front of me. I'm just looking at a map, a Google Earth map. I mean, I'm looking at the fire roads on Arcadia. It's incredible how many, the mileage, how many miles of fire roads there are in Arcadia alone. So the goal here, to your point, is we're doing this work, this shaded fuel break work along all or whole swaths of the main fire road in Arcadia, and basically the point is by clearing out, by cutting shrubs, underbrush, by clearing down dead branches, trees, etc., removing those fuels, what you're doing is you're taking, if a fire were to happen, you are removing fuel, thus limiting a fire's speed. You're basically trying to keep if I can use the word, typical wildfire from becoming a really bad wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to help reduce fire speed and severity, and at the same time make it easier for these brave responders, the firefighters, to respond. And as a state agency in charge of state lands like Arcadia, we of course have a responsibility to do all that we can to lessen the threat to firefighters who do respond. So it's really there's two major goals. One is to clear and manage these hazardous fuels that exist in every forest or forest land in Rhode Island, to help us maintain those fire roads, which are the vital arteries that firefighters use to respond, and thereby protect life and property. And then, as I just said, we're trying to help the responding firefighters, and in so doing, better protect them when they are responding on our lands.
We're in a moment now. I alluded to it at the top. Climate change is real. We know that. What we don't know necessarily is the exact impact it'll have right here in southern New England when it comes to drought going forward, and when it comes to the conditions that are most fertile for wildfires. So is this initiative here in Arcadia and utilizing the green bond, how does this fit into what DEM believes is necessary to meet the moment over the next 10 years? Because this seems like an important part, but it seems like just a part of what would be a broader strategy.
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. Wayne Gretzky had a great line. You don't skate to where the puck is; you skate to where the puck is going. Right. So, we're a public agency. We're trying to respond to public needs, and a major need is, given the scope and the scale of climate change, which is so manifest. I mean, we're talking about right now. I'm struck by the irony. People will be like, "Well, why are you talking about wildfires in the middle of the January when we've just had the most inundating, storms that we've had for, I don't know, years." Well, the reason is because soon enough in the spring or summer, we don't know what the weather pattern is going to be. We do know that generally Rhode Island has become a hotter, drier place, and so that's where the puck is going. And so whether it's through capacity building through the through the training program, whether it's doing projects like the one we're doing at Arcadia, where we're going to be constructing these shaded fuel breaks along the Blitzkrieg Trail. Also, we've been doing for a couple of years now, we've increased the use of prescribed or planned burns, all because climate change is physically and quickly changing the composition of our forest lands, and we have to do new things to combat that, to make our trees and our forests more resilient, because they're such vital resources, you know, as you know, because Arcadia is not far from where you grew up, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so you know this, but I mean, the forests, they provide habitat to wildlife, they remove pollutants from the air, they keep our drinking water sources clean, they absorb floodwaters. I mean, a huge piece of climate change is the fact that forests sequester, you know, millions of tons of carbon. So we regard forests as priceless, irreplaceable assets, and it's our job to do all we can to make sure, like in 20 years, in 50 years, in 100 years, they're still there for future generations to enjoy and rely on. They might look different. For sure, they're going to look different, but it's our job to use the best science that we have and make the best proposals that we can to make that happen.
Do you think this broad area is getting enough attention, not just in the media, but that the funding is where it kind of needs to be in terms of, we'll see what the legislature does, obviously, as you said, but do you feel like this, your world, you know, call it DEM, call it conservation, nature, whatever, is it on enough people's radar as a major issue the way that it ought to be? Certainly, if you talk to Gen Z or a lot of millennials, climate change would probably be, I don't know, within the top three major issues. I'm not so sure it's the same for all generations. At least I get a lot of pushback sometimes on Twitter or on talk radio if this comes up from some people. And you think, boy, you know, this is happening. I mean, you can debate the origin of it if you'd like, but, you know, the idea that it's not happening, I mean, just go down to Exeter last May and take a look around.
Yeah, no, you know, Bill, I think that's a great point. I think there is a generational aspect to this. And I do think that the fact that so many younger people feel strongly about like, what are we doing here? Are we doing enough, you know, to become, you know, more resilient to climate change? I think that's great. I think generally speaking that, you know, I really do believe that anxiety rules the world. And that, you know, our fight flight mechanism is kind of like, it's our default. And so it's all in how we respond. And I think that, you know, it's people are anxious about a lot of things now. There's so many things going on in the world that people are anxious about. But I think the one thing, if you can call it a good thing about, these inundating storms that we've had, these like, you know, the crazy things that we're seeing, the pictures, you know, about these storms and storm damage, it's that it does get people's attention, and you know, constituents can really influence and move the political will of everyone by voicing their opinions and letting their legislators, how they feel about certain issues. You know, I mean, you know, I'll just throw this out as an anecdote, like in terms of people's, in this case, in my opinion, unrealistic expectation. You know, I've gotten, as a PIO, I get a lot of, you know, constituent complaints, which is fine. I mean, look, people pay my salary. I'm happy to try to help them resolve a problem. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But we've had a number of, you know, people who own, you know, nice houses right on the beach, saying, well, why doesn't DEM have a beach replenishment program? Or when's the beach replenishment going to happen?
Yeah, it's and unbelievable.
Bill, I'm like, look, we don't have a beach replenishment program. Okay, that's number one. And I looked at New Jersey since in the late 1930s, when New Jersey started its beach replenishment program, they've spent $3 billion on moving sand around, and they do it every year, and it's $50 million a year. So I'm not that much of a knucklehead that I'm going to say to somebody who's anxious that their house is going to get inundated with seawater, or be that big of a jerk and say, well, look, sorry, we're just not going to do it. But I do need to say to them, look, if you think it's the will of the people to want to pay that much money to do that kind of thing, well, that's certainly an option, but that's the kind of thing that's going to have to be enacted before an agency could just do that. You know what I mean? So I guess my point simply is that people react to these disasters differently. And you know, we have to be realistic and reasonable about what we can do, but there's a lot that we can do.
And I completely agree with that statement in its entirety. And it bleeds into just, you know, I think there's a broad question that a lot of people should ask themselves, or maybe they do. I mean, I'm not saying they don't, but what kind of world do you want to live in? We can ask ourselves that question about a lot of things, but certainly when it comes to issues of anything climate related, anything of the natural world around us, what kind of world do you want? You know, and are you willing to make some level of sacrifice or understand the dynamics of what's happening around you in order to preserve that world going forward? Maybe you hate the world as is. Maybe you'd like to see everything just, you know, no more natural features and just 100%, I don't know, like Dubai or something everywhere. I'm certain that most people, most Rhode Islanders anyway, don't feel that way. Even those who are coastal property owners. And, you know, it's just a weird time because I feel like we're on the precipice of a real shift that is, that's going to change public attitudes around all these discussions in a significant way, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. You know what? I agree, Bill. I hope you're right. I totally, share your view on that. You know, one thing I've noticed over time is that when the economy's good, people care more about the environment. you know what I mean?
Wow, so true. That is like nailed it. That is such an accurate statement, no doubt.
And so everything's interconnected. And so if you know, and we see like how. It literally, where we began this conversation talking about wildfire, and if something happens, something crazy happens, who knows in what sector of the economy, and all of a sudden there's like a giant disruption. That's a wildfire too. So I would say that you know, Rhode Islanders and people everywhere, just knowing that they have important choices to make as voters. And important choices to make as to how they present themselves when they're bringing up issues. Make your voice heard. We don't need to be jerks about it. Just make your voice heard. There's a process, you know, if enough people care about an issue, it gets the attention of state agencies. It gets the attention of the General Assembly. So, you know, there's a process that, you know, a democratic process that we use and rely on, to do our work. And for sure, public input matters a ton.
Super, super well said. Mike Healy, he's with the DEM. You hear him from time to time here on the podcast, and it's always outstanding to have you on here, sir. And great work by DEM on this initiative here. And let's hope it's just the beginning of some substantial efforts at wildfire mitigation as part of just a broad rethinking of how we manage the world that we live in, whether it's the forest or, as you alluded to, the coastal portions. It's critical. It's front line, front and center issue. deserves all the attention, and you deserve all the attention you can get. So thanks for all you're doing.
Bill, thanks so much. And we'll make sure when we're doing some of these projects, including the firefighter training, to get one of our leaders on to talk to you about it in depth.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'm sure the audience would too. Thanks.
Super. All right, Bill.
We are brought to you in part by Navigant Credit Union. As Rhode Island's first ever member-owned credit union, Navigant Credit Union has been a staple in the local business community for more than 108 years. Today, Navigant is a $3.4 billion institution serving more than 136,000 members across 25 physical branch locations. But since its founding in 1915, the mission has never changed. Navigant Credit Union's team of financial professionals have remained committed to improving the financial well-being of the families, businesses, and communities they serve across Rhode Island. Learn more at NavigantCU.org.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.